Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. Polls and vote centers are open. Today is California's primary. And of course, we're in the midst of Super Tuesday 2020. Everything is open until 8 o'clock across the state. And we'll start to get some election returns from across the country with NPR's live coverage at 5 p.m. In the studio with me in person is Ken Rudin, the political junkie. Welcome, Ken.
Happy Super Tuesday.
Yeah, so glad that you're joining our election coverage this week. The presidential race is in the midst of a dramatic shift. It happened just since Saturday's South Carolina primaries, and we are seeing people, voters, delegates, and endorsements moving.
That's true, and actually you could even take it a week before that. When Bernie Sanders won big in Nevada, it scared a lot of establishment Democrats, saying that, do we want Bernie Sanders to represent our party in November? Many committed, more energized, younger voters said absolutely, they want Bernie Sanders. Other more establishment Democrats said no. And so when Biden won big last Saturday in South Carolina, including an overwhelming number among African Americans, that gave a signal to many Democrats, including presidential candidates like Pete Buttigieg, Amy Klobuchar, to say that, well, our candidacy is going nowhere. Maybe get on the Joe Biden bandwagon.
So let's listen to a little bit of how this played out last night in Texas. Here is Amy Klobuchar.
It is up to us, all of us, to put our country back together, to heal this country, and then to build something even greater. I believe we can do this together. And that is why today I am ending my campaign and endorsing Joe Biden for president.
So Amy was the most recent candidate to drop out, but let's back up to Pete Buttigieg. He was also there last night in Texas, and listen to what he has to say.
When I ran for president, we made it clear that the whole idea was about rallying the country together to defeat Donald Trump and to win the era for the values that we share. And that was always a goal that was much bigger than me becoming president. And it is in the name of that very same goal that I'm delighted to endorse and support Joe Biden for president.
That was an important event last night in Texas.
It was, because, of course, Texas is the number two state voting today on Super Tuesday. But it also gave a signal that while Donald Trump is the ultimate Democratic opponent for November right now, according to many in the establishment, and who knows what the establishment means anymore, but the number one concern is Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders, after a strong finish in Iowa, a narrow victory in New Hampshire, and a clear victory in Nevada, many Democrats saw that Bernie Sanders was the front runner. And Joe Biden, who was 0-3 in those early states, who was left for dead by many Democrats, suddenly became the alternative.
So let's listen to Bernie Sanders then, because he talked about the voters who have been tracking Amy and tracking Pete and spoke directly to them last night.
I want to open the door to Amy's supporters, to Pete's supporters. I know that there are political differences, but I also know that virtually all of Amy's support and Pete's support understand that we have got to move toward a government which believes in justice, not greed.
Is he going to win some of them over?
That's a good question. I mean, there's no guarantee that just because Buttigieg and Klobuchar have endorsed Joe Biden that all their supporters will go to Joe Biden as well. It's very, very unpredictable. The fact is that of all the candidates, including the ones who are no longer in the race, Bernie Sanders had the most enthusiasm, the most energized volunteer staff of anybody in the country. So look at what's happening in California and Texas. These are basically great-looking states for Bernie Sanders. The fact that he has great organization, a lot of money spent in the state, and strong Latino populations, which is where what we saw in Nevada, could be bode very good news for Bernie Sanders. However, we are also seeing Michael Bloomberg for the first time, having skipped the first four states. He is spending a ton of money, $200 million in Super Tuesday states alone. Michael Bloomberg will be on the ballot for the first time today.
So the event in Texas last night was a Joe Biden rally, and we're going to hear from Joe Biden right now, but there was someone else on stage with him last night, the reappearance of someone named Beto.
Beto O'Rourke was, of course, you know, ran a very close race against Ted Cruz for the Senate. He was the early darling for the 2020 nomination. His campaign fizzled out early, but again, an endorsement by Beto O'Rourke in Texas that has all these delegates at stake today could be significant.
There's one more person I want to thank, a man who electrified this state and nation. One of the most incredible runs of the United States Senate we have ever seen here in the state. A man who demonstrated enormous compassion and courage in the wake of the shooting in El Paso. A man with unlimited future. A man who will be changing this nation for the better for many years to come. Ladies and gentlemen, Beto O'Rourke. And his wife, Amy.
So that was Joe Biden. But of course, there are going to be two more names on the ballot that are still current and running, one being Tulsi Gabbard, the other being Elizabeth Warren, who has a lot of support here in California.
She does. And she also has a lot of support back home in Massachusetts. But there's a new WBUR poll that shows that Bernie Sanders with a double digit lead over Elizabeth Warren. And the fact is that Warren, the senator from Massachusetts, has finished third or fourth in the first four contests so far. If she loses her home state, what is the argument for her campaign to continue?
Let's hear from Elizabeth Warren. She held a rally in Los Angeles last night.
From the start of this campaign, despite so many great candidates with so many different perspectives, voters were worried about beating Donald Trump, and they have been told there are only two lanes, only two choices. And now we find ourselves barreling toward another primary along the same lanes as 2016, one for an insider, one for an outsider. Democratic voters should have more choice than that. America should have more choice than that.
So, a number of people in California with early voting might have already voted, Ken.
You know, you always want to promote things like early voting because you want the electorate to expand as much as possible. But that comes with that comes the risk of voting for somebody early, right? Early voting in California started February 3rd. Many candidates, Andrew Yang, Pete Buttigieg, Amy Klobuchar, Tom Steyer, have all dropped out. Since then, those votes will be lost. And I understandably, there'll be a lot of people regretting voting early.
So polls and vote centers are open in California until 8 p.m. Of course, every state hopes for a record turnout, and the early voting numbers have been encouraging. We are going to take a closer look now at who is eligible to vote and who is voting. I'm very happy to welcome Paul Mitchell to the studio. Hi, Paul.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Glad to have you here. Paul's the vice president of a company called Political Data, Inc. Why don't you explain what you do? I think then people will get the understanding of where you're on the pulse during
sure.
this election time.
So PDI, Political Data Incorporated, is a company based in Southern California, but we work throughout the state. We're a bipartisan data vendor to all of the campaigns. And so whether it's a Democratic campaign, a Republican campaign, a ballot measure, a school board race, you know, all throughout the state at all levels, we provide data so that people can contact voters. And as a result of that, we've managed this one statewide voter file for over 30 years, and we have the ability to kind of glean these insights from the data as we see it, and also to be able to kind of deconstruct for people what the different changes in our election systems mean for the electorate, and, you know, what kind of voters are participating and when, all of this information. And early vote is a key thing that we're looking at. With this state really growing the number of people who are voting early, we actually mailed ballots to 16 million voters this election cycle, which is a huge record, a 60% increase over 2016. And at PDI, we do things like maintain the dates that everybody returns their absentee ballots for every election going back to about 2004. And we use that kind of information to help campaigns target voters.
So early voting has been popular and successful in California, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been increasing. When I first started voting, you had to have an excuse to be able to become an absentee voter. You had to have a disability, or you were out of state, or right. There was some reason that you couldn't go physically to a polling place. And that excuse-based absentee voting was really common, especially in Southern California. In some Northern California counties, they started going to more vote by mail, and we saw higher and higher turnout. And as a result of that, the state has largely started moving people towards voting by mail. As Ken mentioned, it does have this opportunity to expand the electorate by giving people a longer period of time to vote and basically making it a little bit easier for everybody to participate.
So here we are today. I'm interested in how each of you look at California primary day, whether it's through the lens of, Paul, in your case, who's voting? Is it the Latino bloc that's powerful? Is it the millennials and the Gen Xers?
And
is
Gen
it
Ys now.
Gen Ys now also. Is it the Biden, Bernie, or Bloomberg, and let's add Elizabeth Warren? Is it the battle of the personalities? What do you each think, Paul?
Well, you know, the data is really interesting, and definitely you're right. You know, Ken can really speak a lot more to the candidates and the messages and the personalities going into the race. And I'm more able to speak to kind of the voters and the data that are behind it. You mentioned Latinos. Latinos is a huge growing portion of the electorate. Right now, they're just over a quarter of the registered voters. And obviously, they're the plurality of the state's population. But in terms of turnout, you know, in a primary like this, we would expect them to be a quarter of the registered voters, but probably a fifth of who turns out. And in early voting, we see them being even a smaller portion of that early voting block. We expect a lot of those voters and a lot of the millennials to show up on Election Day. And honestly, when you're talking about Gen X or Gen Y and millennials, the fact is that they are also where the heart of the Latino population is mm-hmm. on our voter file.
And they are Bernie supporters. We've had a number of people say they love their Uncle Bernie.
Well, we saw that in Nevada, certainly. I mean, that was the first state, unlike Iowa and New Hampshire, where basically it was a white electorate. In Nevada, we saw for the first time a Latino voting population. And according to those numbers, they voted heavily for Bernie Sanders. I will say, though, that since 1992, every candidate who won the larger percentage, the larger share of African-American voters has gone on to win the nomination. That's Bill Clinton, that's Al Gore, that's John Kerry, that's Barack Obama in 2008, Hillary Clinton in 2016. So ultimately, we will talk about the growing strength of Latino voters, but look what happened coming out of South Carolina, and again with a lot of states in the South voting today as well. Joe Biden is banking on a large percentage of African-Americans to carry him to the nomination.
All right. We're going to check in right now at a polling place or a vote center with Cap Radio state government reporter Scott Rodd. Hi, Scott.
Morning, Beth.
So are you at the VIP voting center for the moment? Is that it?
I guess you could call it that. Yeah. The California Museum on O Street in downtown Sacramento. Pretty soon, Governor Gavin Newsom is expected to cast his ballot here. So I'm here with a number of other folks from the media, but it is certainly open to the public as well. They would probably walk in and see lots of cameras and wonder what all the hubbub is about, but it is open to the public as well.
All right. Thank you, Scott. Endorsements. Again, when we get to personalities, Ken, the list of endorsements and the people rallying around the candidate, how much influence is that?
That's a great question, and it's a very complicated question. And, of course, I go back to the famous scene in 2004 in Iowa when Howard Dean was a Democratic frontrunner and got the endorsements of Tom Harkin, the very popular senator from Iowa, and Al Gore. And yet, as it turned out, Howard Dean finished third to John Kerry, John Edwards, and then Howard Dean. So it's just so limited. But if you look at a who's who in Democratic politics, aside from Kamala Harris and maybe Governor Newsom as well, it seems like almost every significant big name Democrat in the state have endorsed Joe Biden. And my list is right in front of me. You have Betty Yee, the state controller. You have Dianne Feinstein. You have Alex Padilla. You have Mayor Daryl Steinberg, Mayor Eric Garcetti of Los Angeles, Ami Bera, John Garamendi. You have basically a who's who of the Democratic Party. I don't know if it is so much support for Biden as it is fear of a Bernie Sanders nomination.
I'm going to add one bit of breaking news here. NBC is reporting that Kamala Harris is going to endorse Joe Biden at a rally in Oakland today.
And that explains why Joe Biden was planning that rally in Oakland at 10:30 this morning.
All right, back to the data, Paul. The person at the top of the ticket, mm-hmm. and so much being said about the ripple down and the difference that it can make in congressional races and local races.
Sure.
Add the scientific picture to that.
Well, you definitely, when we saw, as an example, in the 2018 election cycle, we saw really huge turnout and the flipping of these congressional districts all around the state. And it was really a banner year for Democrats in 2018 because they were able to mobilize their base and actually get out a lot of independents who were more apt to be progressive and appeal to this kind of anti-Trump message in 2018. Going into 2020, that kind of abstract motivation of being against Trump is going to be replaced by whoever is the nominee. The nominee on the Democratic side is going to be the one that is going to pull out Democratic voters and independents who would prefer a Democratic candidate. And who that candidate is and the types of voters that they can pull out is really what a lot of what this election's about. A lot of that consolidation that you see post-South Carolina and the endorsements and the movement of the Democratic establishment is about one viewpoint as to what type of candidate is necessary to get the right turnout in November. And the Bernie Sanders campaign and his supporters, I think, equally and just as passionately believe that they have a different pathway to getting the turnout and the motivation of voters to, you know, ultimately be able to both win the White House and hold on to or gain in these congressional races and around the country in legislative races and gubernatorial races.
Which is what Elizabeth Warren was referring to when she said, we're going to have an insider and an outsider. And she said, let's not let it be a two-lane race. Ken?
And expanding on what Paul just said, remember during the last debate, one of Pete Buttigieg's arguments for himself, of course, was that we, the Democrats, need a nominee who can hold the House and pick up the Senate. And I think that was an implied jab at Bernie Sanders, who, in Pete's mind at least, would be unable to assemble the kind of coalition that could beat Trump in November.
Paul, what about this no party preference group in California? And we're told it's getting bigger, but there was also some confusion about it this year.
Yeah, so there's a growing number of independents in this state. And a part of it is because of the way that we've run our elections. Since 2012, if you're an independent, you get to vote for Democrats or Republicans in the primaries. It's basically you can do anything you want if you're a nonpartisan voter. And so there's just been an increase in voting and registering nonpartisan. There's also been kind of maybe an alienation that a lot of youngers feel to the two-party system. And so registering independent has been a pathway more people have gone down. But at the same time, over this last 8 years, we've trained California voters to say, when you vote, you're going to see all the candidates. And then we kind of throw this curveball in every presidential primary where they have to actually affirmatively request a Democratic ballot to be able to vote in the presidential contest.
But I have a question about that. Is that at the direction of the state Democratic Party, or is that the state itself?
Well, it's actually embedded within the proposition that was passed that created the top two primary. It said that the state will kind of not follow the top two in presidential primaries and allow the national parties to decide how those elections are going to be run. And so the DNC says that that voters who are independent have to request affirmatively a Democratic ballot. Other states have gone another direction. In Colorado, they, for all independent voters, they mail them a Democratic and Republican ballot. They don't let the national parties decide. Mm. They've written it differently. So an independent voter can say, okay, well, I guess I want to vote in the Democratic primary. And as long as they only mail one back, it will count. So in our system, we've created a pathway for these nonpartisans. But it was really tough. You had these nonpartisans getting a postcard from the registrar between Thanksgiving and Christmas. that they were supposed to fill out and mail back to get a Democratic ballot. We know that 2/3 of those independents wanted to vote in the presidential primary. If they were interested in voting at all, they wanted to vote on the Democratic presidential primary. And yet only 10% of nonpartisans have that requisite ballot if they were vote by mail. So voters who are voting at the polls today will be asked, if they're a nonpartisan, do you want to get a presidential primary ballot? That should be no problem. I think we're going to have a lot of independents voting in the Democratic presidential primary at the polls. But for those voting by mail, I think you're going to have literally millions of those voters opening up their ballots, seeing a blank section when it comes to the presidential race and wondering why they can't vote in the Democratic primary.
And to change this, we actually have to go back and change the law.
Have to change the law. And there's been a lot of discussion with legislators in the Secretary of State's office, even before this election, going back a couple of years as to whether or not it could even be done statutorily, or we'd have to have an amendment to the Constitution via proposition to actually change this one little rule that says essentially that a voter needs to fill out a little postcard every 4 years to request a Democratic ballot.
What's going to happen to the presidential race, Ken, after tonight? And maybe that speaks a bit to the delegate count, but also the personality of the race.
Well, I'm smiling when you're asking that question because remember 3 weeks ago, after dismal finishes in Iowa and New Hampshire and a poor second place showing in Nevada, Joe Biden was left for dead. I mean, that's basically one of the things that got Michael Bloomberg excited about and spending all this money, because he thought that he would be the alternative to Bernie Sanders. So to say what's going to happen after today, who knows? I suspect that it'll be a very good day for Bernie Sanders. The question is, how good will it be for Joe Biden, who does have this? We talked about Amy momentum, or now it is Joe momentum coming out of South Carolina. We'll see how much Biden benefits by this coalescing among moderate centrist establishment votes for Joe Biden, or whether Michael Bloomberg, with his millions and millions of dollars of advertising, will make a difference on Tuesday. We have no idea what the landscape is going to look like tomorrow, but I suspect that it'll be exciting. And then, of course, you have states like Michigan and Florida and Ohio and Illinois coming up in the next couple of weeks. It could change all over again.
One more question, Paul, about these voter blocks. So much is made of the group of African-American voters across the country and their power. But in California, with so much emphasis on Latino voters, as well as Nevada, is that a growing group that you could imagine in time overtaking the political power of the African-American vote?
So the African-American vote is key in California within certain portions of the state. The Latino population definitely is a lot larger, and then there's also a growing Asian population. The Asian population, I think, is one of the most interesting, because the older Asian population is traditionally more conservative, more Republican. The younger Asian population is some of the most liberal voters in the state. Mm-hmm. So there are definitely these ethnic dynamics in our electorate, and we do see a growing Asian and Latino population becoming more important. And I think a lot of folks who have been watching the California electorate have been waiting for a long time for that Latino population to start performing at their full strength. And I believe that's going to really start as a lot of those younger Latinos kind of get into the mid-40s, mid-50s age ranges, where we see all voters of all ethnicities really turn into more regular voters.
He is Paul Mitchell, vice president of a company called Political Data, Inc. Also with us in the studio is Ken Rudin, the political junkie. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll check in with registrars across the region and talk a little bit more about this California primary day on Super Tuesday 2020. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio.